So quickly, maybe 20-second introduction here. And Joe and Pat, just can you come here if you don't mind so that you all be occupying the others, King Others roundtable here? The microphones are there in case you want to say anything. So.
Right. So everyone needs to just click the speak on their microphone here so that makes sure that everyone online can hear what we're saying.
Yeah. So, and for those of you who want internet, you should have had a purple card in your badge. If not, you go to AWARDS, AWARDS is the network here, and there's a password, which anyways, no. Anyone wants the password here for this? Okay. That's fine. We don't want to talk about the password on the phone on the No, we're fine? We'll pass it around, okay? Because we don't know who's logging in and getting into it. Security issues. So let's go from Michael here and.
I'm Michael Gruninger from the University of Toronto, the co-chair this year for the summit. I've been working in the previous summits since the beginning and really excited to start this year's with the Internet of Things. Hi, it's Mark Underwood at Krypton Brothers. I'm the co-chair. And my interest is on the software engineering side of this. I'm also the co-chair of the NIST subgroup, public working group on big data, security, and privacy.
I'm Gary Bergcross. I'm a co-champion of TrackB, which is Beyond Sensor, Semantic Sensor Network. Also a long-time participant in the Ontology Summits, and I'm involved in the Spatial Ontology Community of Practice.
I'm Shaw Mandata. I'm the Senior Vice President of IIC, the Industrial Internet Consortium, and I'll give a talk and discuss some of the things that's happening in the IIC.
I'm Stu Rogers. I'm a Managing Director at Tier 1 Performance Solutions. I just became aware of the Ontology Summit in the last few months. Started reading up on it and thought that I would like to be involved and find out what is going on. We're out there in industry actually trying to apply some of the research results around human performance prediction, and human performance modeling, and I'm interested in the applications of applying ontologies in making decisions and automated decision making across domains.
My name is Frank Olkin. I'm a program director here at the National Science Foundation in the computing directorate in the Intelligent Information Systems Division, the III cluster. I've been involved in the ontology summits for 4 or 5 years, and I handle ontology development, tools, various knowledge representation, including description logic proposals and other things for the National Science Foundation.
My name is James Magira. I'm working for Booz Allen Hamilton. As far as ontology things go, I've been a hobbyist and have a lot of interest in it. I'm currently trying to spur some interest and some work inside of Booz on ontology work. And I'm very curious to hear what's going to be said today.
Hi, my name is Frederick Devo. I'm with Prometheus Computing and contracting for NIST, more specifically for RAM in the Software and Systems Division. I've been involved in a project that tried to look at the integration between the characteristics of cloud computing and cyber physical systems, and I've been following the summits on the phone mostly.
Good morning, Judith Galernter. I'm formerly from Carnegie Mellon University and is, as of the past week, at NIST working with Ron.
Welcome to the summit.
Nice.
And symposium.
I'm Terry Longstreth. I've been involved in the data processing industry since the 60s. My last several years before I retired from IBM or Lockheed Martin, I worked with predecessors of ontology for a couple of government customers, and I've been involved in the ontology summit itself since the mid in the mid years of the first decade.
Hi, Pat Cassidy, currently retired, working with ontologies for 20 years, and I've been working with the Ontology Summit since it started.
I'm Joe Cabina from a tiny company called Bellerophon Mobile. I gave one of the presentations earlier in the summit on ontologies for tactical battlefield networking. I also have a lot of experience in the past on ontologies in engineering design applications.
Jim, you want to switch on the...
Yeah, Jim Mulbacher, VP Technology Development, and we're building an Internet of Things platform. And we're looking to integrate the ontology.
Great. Before the FWAD is going to say a few words on the phone. Yeah, the phone, online.
Yeah. So if the people in the chat could maybe just briefly introduce themselves, I guess go in the order that you are in the chat room. So Antoine.
Hello. This is Antoine Jaradin. I'm working for Prometheus, and I'm contracting at NIST. My interest is in cyber physical system and cloud computing systems. And also I work on ontology evaluation. And yeah, I'm very interested about seeing what will come about in this community.
Okay, Bruce?
This is Bruce Bray. I'm at the University of Utah in Batmet. My medical informatics and cardiology, but an interest in healthcare applications of ontologies.
Hey, Jack?
I'm Jack Ring. I've been involved in system development for 55 years. My current interest is twofold. One is determining how to harmonize various ontologies that are brought into a project by various perspectives of teams. And the second is how to debug systems that are built based on given ontologies.
Thanks. Ken.
Hi, this is Ken Baslavsky. I'm at Northeastern University. I've been involved in ontologies and the Ontology Summit pretty much since it began. I'll be working on helping with the infrastructure and especially with Track C on decision making.
Laverne Pritchard.
Laverne Pritchard from Pritchard Law Web in Minneapolis. I'm very much a marginal hanger-oner here learning from you folks. I've been doing a lot of work with semantic networks for legal applications and looking to learn more of the formalities of the way you folks do things.
Okay, thanks. Mike Bennett.
Hi, I'm Mike Bennett. I have a small consultancy called Hypercube that focuses on ontologies for conceptual modeling, and I consult with the Enterprise Data Management Council, where we've developed an ontology for the financial industry called the Financial Industry Business Ontology. And I'm also kind of sleeping co-champion for Track C.
And Peter.
Hi, I'm Peter Yim from CIM3, almost totally retired, but since I've been involved in the Ontology Summit and other activities from the beginning, I'm very interested to see the proceedings of this year's summit.
Great. And is there anyone else on the call who isn't in the chat yet? If you're not, please go into the chat, but is there anyone else on the call?
Yeah, this is Brand Neiman. I just signed in. I'm the director and senior data scientist of Semantic Community. I'm the founder and co-organizer of the Federal Big Data Working Group Meetup.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm Bob in Teagarden. I'm an independent consultant and have been following Ontolog for years and am implementing agents who think in ontologies and am looking for visualization of the IoT, and so I hope that's one of the topics that we'll pick up next.
Great. Anyone else? Okay, well, I guess we can get started.
Okay. Fouad, say a few words.
Thank you, Ram. Just very quickly, I would like to welcome everyone on behalf of George Strawn, Director of the National Coordination Office for Networking and Information Technology Research and Development Program. George sends his regrets for not being able to join you all this morning because of health reasons. He also sends his regards, and he wanted me to mention how delighted we are to be hosting the Ontology Summit for the second year in a row. I know that the theme this year, Internet of Things, is a topic that's very dear to his heart. So thank you all for coming, and keep up the good work.
Okay, so we just have a few, Mark and I do have a few opening slides here. Oops, where are they? If you go to the meeting page, you can download them there, the session page for today. So at the very top there. So just some perspectives on Ontology Summit 2015. So why are we here? This year, when we selected the topic of the Internet of Things, we really saw that there is this emergence of networks of intelligent devices, a whole range of kinds of devices, not just sensors, but a whole entire range of what we might call smart objects. And these objects are constantly sensing their environment, monitoring what's going on, and then interpreting what's happening and recognizing, say, maybe more complex sorts of situations and events. And so we thought that this very exciting field provided an excellent opportunity for identifying a whole range of challenges that really illustrate why ontologies might be needed. Challenges such as seamless semantic interoperability. So not just this kind of idea of working together on a predefined project, coming up with mappings, identifying ontologies. It's a very sort of point-to-point still sort of way of doing things. Whereas with the Internet of Things, it was really, this had to be seamless. This had to be done, has to be done in real time. It has to be done with an incredible diversity of underlying semantics and ontologies. Also, this ability to recognize and react to a changing environment, so the idea of situation awareness, but again, being able to interpret what's happening, not just say take what all this raw data, but to be able to say this is what all of this data means in a particular context, and then reacting appropriately. So this was, we figured this was again an excellent opportunity to issue these challenges to the applied ontology community in the context of IoT applications. And so we hope that we've taken these first steps towards making this kind of bridge over to the IoT community. And we're hoping that in this symposium, we'll be learning from each other, learning challenges and problems on the one hand, but also learning about new solutions that people have. So in the overall structure of the summit, as everyone is aware, the summit is really this three-month virtual online event followed by this face-to-face symposium. So at the beginning of the summit, we identified four main tracks, and this served as the overall architecture for the summit in terms of what kind of content we were providing, and we will be hearing today from each of these tracks, summary presentations. And for all those track champions, if you haven't sent your slides for this morning, please email them to Ken Bukowski, and he'll make sure that they're on the meeting page for everyone to download. So the four tracks, again, were, first of all, ontology integration in the Internet of Things. So you have all these devices, these networks, they have to communicate with each other. You have this huge issue then of how do you get all of these smart objects and sensors and other kinds of devices to actually work together. So then that led to another content track, which we called Beyond Semantic Sensor Network Ontologies. And these are the two tracks we'll be hearing from this morning.
This afternoon, we'll be looking at the track, what we call track C, which was decision-making in different domains. So as I mentioned on the previous slide, there's not only this need to have this seamless semantic interoperability, but there's also this need to be able to react, to sense the environment, and to react appropriately. And so there's a lot of decision-making that needs to be done, and how can ontology support that kind of decision-making? And then finally, in sort of related to some, an earlier ontology summit, there's this interaction, these synergies between emerging IoT standards and emerging ontologies for IoT applications. And what's the interplay between the standards community, that range, that ecosystem of standards related to IoT applications, and the applied ontology community? So that was the kind of the architecture that we had for the summit, and that can be determined the different the tracks. As a result of the summit over the past 3 months, we've also kind of identified four key issues. So one was making the case for IoT ontology. So really pinning down, this harkens back to an earlier ontology summit of making the case for ontologies, but in this case, what were the really kind of unique aspects of IoT that really drives what kinds of ontologies do we need to have to support IoT? And then the key issue then of how exactly these ontologies are used. What are the kinds of applications? Is this doing inference, straightforward inference, or are these being embedded within the different kinds of smart devices? And as I mentioned before, one of the interesting things about the Internet of Things is just this, you know, sheer size. You have millions of devices potentially online interacting with each other. And so the challenge of scalability is something that really is something that cannot be avoided. And then finally, arising out of the track D, the fourth track, was ontology-based standards for IoT. And so how can we as an applied ontology community help provide the ontological foundations for IoT standards? So on slide four, what have we learned? Well, definitely one of the conclusions we have is that IoT ontologies need to deal with dynamic time-varying data rather than, say, some of the more often static applications within the traditional semantic web. And so we really kind of identified that there's this need to have more work in developing and implementing event ontologies. One point that came out loud and clear through many of the discussions was the lack of tools that we have to support ontology applications within IoT. And these tools range from simple semantic annotation all the way through tools for doing ontology validation and integration. That was really one of the big key issues that we heard over and over again. And then finally, we recognize that there really is a more coordinated effort is required to kind of compile a lot of these case studies, that we really need to be driven by these applications. And so we really need to gather these case studies in a coherent way, and through those case studies, to really drive the development and design, implementation, and evaluation of IoT ontologies in areas ranging from sensor integration, smart grid, smart healthcare, and more. So finally, on the last slide, slide five, what are some of the concrete outcomes of the summit that we've identified? One is, of course, the communicate, traditional outcome of the summit, and we'll be discussing that tomorrow morning. Another concrete outcome are the demonstrations of actual ontology-based IoT applications to show that these ideas can really actually work. And that will be part of the demonstration showcase tomorrow afternoon. And then finally, the collection of use cases that we're gathering, as I said on the previous slide. So through these resources, we will continue our efforts to coordinate the design and evaluation of IoT ontologies, and also look for new applications of ontologies within the Internet of Things. So thank you very much. That just provides a little basis for the next today and tomorrow. And so now I'll pass it on to Ron to introduce our first keynote speaker.
Thank you, Michael. And also we have, as Potter mentioned, that we do have a panel tomorrow afternoon on standards and ontologies. So I only will use those two keywords. And Professor Iswaran Subramaniam from Carnegie Mellon is going to be the coordinator of that panel. And he has lined up a very nice set of panelists. They are not here, but they'll be here tomorrow. Okay. With that, anything else that I missed, Michael or Mark? You're okay? Leo, you're okay? All set to go? We are kind of on time, a few minutes late, but we are on time. Again, the coffee, bagels, and other things are out there. You're always welcome to walk there and pick it up. But we do have a break at 10:30. Our first speaker is Soumen Patel, Austin Datta. He actually, as I mentioned before, came just for this particular workshop to talk about this interesting and emerging internet, industrial internet consortium, where he serves as the senior vice president. He's also the senior vice president for OMG, I guess, and he's been involved very closely. He was actually a co-founder of the MIT's consortium for supply chain management, I guess, okay, if I'm not. Soumen has a very varied background, as you will kind of see from his talk. He's actually a philosopher, a writer, and also heavily interested in the medical field. Neuroendocrinology, I believe, is one of the fields that he's into. He served as a research fellow at one of the big hospitals in Massachusetts, and you can figure out what it is. And there are so many of them. Without any ado, let me welcome Soumen. And thanks again for that. Okay, you might want to mention that.
Let me get started. Thank you, Ram. Good morning. Thank you very much. I thank Ram for inviting me. Things that I just heard are very exciting. It's the things that I thought about and did something 10 years back, but then stopped because of various issues, and I will bring that out later on. So I am going to give you a very broad introduction to the IIC, and then I will give you an idea about some of the issues we're thinking about. And from what I have just heard, I think that you guys really need to get involved far more hands-on with the Industrial Internet Consortium or similar activities, because the amount of knowledge and experience you have in this room and from the people online who are in the chat room, it is going to be a terrible waste if you really do not put your effort into this new field. And I think that this needs to happen, and I'm delighted and very thankful that Ram asked me to come, because I wouldn't have known about the wealth that's here in the group. And I am going to make an effort through Ram to get some of you dragged into doing some of the things we are doing, because you really need to come up with tools.
Are you getting the IIC to us?
Both ways. I think it goes both ways. So let me give you an idea. Everything that I'm saying, every slide is available on my MIT website. So I will give you the link several times. Just go and download anything you want to download. So very briefly, this is how far my interaction goes back with the internet. So I was one of the organizers of NetDay in 1996 in California, where we were successful in getting two gentlemen to come out, pull some wires, and actually wire public schools. And this was, this photograph. I took this photograph, CNN acquired it, and now it's in Wikipedia. So it is. It's been a long journey. So this is not something trivial in my way of looking at things. So we started back in 1999. We started at MIT, the Auto ID Center, and mostly my colleagues Sanjay Sharma, David Brock, Kevin Ashton. We started the RFID, reinventing RFID, as I call it, because RFID had existed since 1940s after the radar war But so RFID-based solutions, we started in 1999, and from there really came out IoT. So this is the first ever paper. I say this is the first ever paper with all due respect to Herbert Simon, because in 1987, Herbert Simon had a paper where he talked about how industry, computers, technology will spur innovation. Herbert Simon's paper was picked up by Mark Weiser at Xerox Palo Alto, and in 1991, he published a paper in Scientific American where he also discussed how computers will be weaving into our daily lives. But this one was the first paper from Sanjay and other people, David and Kevin at MIT, that talked about IoT, the network physical world. So this is my sketch. This was published. This is my sketch in 2003 of what the future of this will look like, the industrial internet. I did not call it the industrial internet. I called it Internet Zero. The reason I called it Internet Zero is because Neil Gershenfeld at that time at MIT was talking about the importance of having small bits of data rather than large, because real-time data in small amounts can make decisions, can actuate processes. So I called it Internet Zero because of what I thought was really an important way of approach of looking at it. So now if you look at this, and if you look at the industrial internet, they're pretty much all of the things that are happening. And that's the reason why I am involved in the Industrial Internet Consortium. So this is published. This was published in 2008. I generally don't write papers to publish. I write it because I enjoy putting it together. I have been fortunate to lead a life where I did not have to write to survive. So this was published by, picked up by somebody and published in 2008. It's in print. And that has led to the Internet of Things. This is a cartoon many of you have seen. Obviously, it's an overhyped cartoon, very much like RFID was in 1999. But hype gets the papers to talk about it. So there's a marketing side to it. I don't expect you to read it now. If you're interested, this captures the brief history of IoT, starting with Herbert Simon and Mark Weiser. So IoT is about convergence, connectivity, components, collaboration, community, all of these things. On the left-hand side, I have given you something that I have found in the past year. There is an IoT radio on chip from Stanford, and at UT Arlington, University of Texas Arlington, they have found a way to have to make cold electrons energy at room temperature. There's a lot of people in this room who will understand this much better. There should be more people outside this room who will understand it even better. If you combine those two, you can connect almost anything. And I'll leave it to your imagination for the time being. So this is the European version of Industry 4.0, which is obviously what we call cyber physical systems. They call it Industry 4.0, but it's a combination. Industry 4.0 is a combination of cyber physical systems with Internet of Things, which I call Internet of Systems. So just before we formed the Industrial Internet Consortium, Sanjay at MIT formed the Cloud of Things, which is obviously reference to putting things or data about things on the cloud. And then the Industrial Internet Consortium was formed on 27th March 2014. We started with 5 founding members, and a couple weeks back, we had the first year completion, 27th of March, 2015. We have 159 members, and you can read for yourself. These are the large members, large industry members. Almost any large industry is already here. These are the small industry members. There are some very critical people here, even though they're collectively under the large, small industry. And these are nonprofit and academic members who are part of the Industrial Internet Consortium. So, and it's a global consortium. We have global members. We have the Japanese, the Germans, the Europeans, the South Americans, everybody from all over the world, the Koreans, Chinese, Taiwan. And this is the cartoon from GE that talks about the $70 trillion economy that will be boosted by the internet, industrial internet. Again, you have to take all of this with a grain of salt because we have had projections like this, but undoubtedly there are going to be some profit that will come out of the ability to connect things and to make decisions which are more intelligent. So this is from 22nd of August, 2014. This is the networked physical world. You can see how this was created. This is a map of all the things that are connected in the world, and much of the world is still not connected. And we are almost at the very beginning stages. We are like in the 1950s when black and white TV was very fuzzy. So we are at that realm, at that region with the Internet of Things. But it's gaining a lot of attention. So this is from the Undersecretary of Defense on November 17, 2014, calling the Defense Science Board to think about autonomy for the next two decades. And if you look at this, I think I'll use this. If you look at this, you will see that the Defense Department is looking into robotics, automation, Google self-driving car, automated logistics, supply chain management, and many more. So the Defense Science Board is convening this summer, and there are multiple subcommittees which are thinking about how the Department of Defense and whatever happens in defense obviously trickles down to the commercial sector. They will be looking at a roadmap for autonomy. So I couldn't give a talk to a lot of academics without mentioning this brilliant book. Many of you may know about this book, but automation or autonomy did not start with the Defense Science Board or with Google's self-driving car. This is a phenomenal book which traces automaton from 2nd century BC. So if you have the time and want to relax your mind, this is very well researched by Gabby Wood. And I can't mention this without mentioning our sense of the future, the elevator to space. So we are somewhere between the elevator to space and Edison's Eve. So that brings me to Internet of Systems. That was a long preface to Internet of Systems, and I call it Internet of Systems because we are connecting a lot of things, and all of these things are systems. These are not things. So Internet of Things was okay, but Internet of Things has matured to Internet of Systems. The URL on the top corner, bit.ly/MIT-IoT, that's the URL. All of these slides, all of the talks are on that URL, plus there's all sorts of other things if you're interested. So the grand challenges I will mention are transportation, smart cities, healthcare, data. I'll just mention a little bit of stuff. And Let me just point out before I move on to part two, what's the difference? The industrial internet and the consumer so-called IoT, the fundamental difference is that a lot of consumer IoT is thinking about security as an application layer addition. The industrial internet cannot afford to do that. Security must be one of the fundamental tenets of the industrial internet. So the industrial internet must have very robust security. I think that will apply generally to also consumer IoT eventually, but today there are many devices and many things which are connected, standalone connections that may not have a significant amount of security built into them. And hacking a car and things like that are very common examples. So eventually, where do we want to go? Create more jobs. So the economy wants to make certain that we are creating more jobs, and we are at wave number three, the industrial internet wave, which we are pursuing and which we are, you know, just beginning to find out. So this was just an introduction to one part. And now I'm going to give you a little bit of idea about some of the things we are trying to do. Please, again, understand when I say we, it's a collective word, many people, many things. So Internet of Systems, we are trying to do some big things. So let me explain. One of the first things about IIC is that the Industrial Internet Consortium, now comprised of 159 or 60 members, we are creating some test beds. These test beds are about real-time deployment. There are some smaller test beds and there are some big test beds. So one of my interests, the reason I am involved in this, is because I want to pursue things that are extremely difficult to do, has a very high probability of failure that other people will not want to do and for which we can try to figure out if we can get funding. So that's what I am pursuing. There is another group within the IIC called the Test Bed Working Group that are looking into more tactical, practical, industry-funded test beds, small test beds. And the first one was started in Germany by Bosch and a group of other companies, and that test bed is about smart items in manufacturing using RFID. So I will give you an idea of the very convoluted, large, amorphous, difficult test bed that we are trying to pursue. And we have accomplished step one for number one, and I'll give you an idea of what we have accomplished. So this is not economy. Uber, Alibaba, Facebook, and Airbnb is not IoT, is not the future, is not the economy. Because we can't continue to have an economy based on castles in the cloud. Platform economy is more of the new bottom line about economy. There will be immense platforms, and that's what I will try to talk about. So first of all, if you're interested to see what's happening, I've given you the URL, a lot of the information about things in progress in various folders are in these folders. You can download these folders, look at this, and we are pursuing smart cities, transportation, and healthcare. So let me give you briefly an idea about what it is. Smart cities, we are looking into seismic and infrastructure monitoring. The idea is that we have earthquake monitoring, we know that. But when you have low-level earthquakes, low-level seismic activity, what is the impact on the water, sewer, electricity, in the bridges, buildings? So this is what we are trying to do in this project that we are calling the global SIM cities. SIM stands for Seismic and Infrastructure Monitoring. We are looking into the data and the analytics, which is combined from seismic activity and infrastructure, sewers, buildings, and all of the other things that we can monitor. So we are working with two cities. We are working with Oakland in California, which is on the San Andreas Fault, the Hayward Fault, and we are working with Izmit in Turkey. The reason we're working with Izmit in Turkey is because Izmit sits on the mouth of the North Anatolian Fault, and in 1999, 70,000 people were killed in Izmit, Turkey, from one of the earthquakes. However, very interestingly, 90 miles west of Izmit is Istanbul, and the Hagia Sophia has existed in Istanbul since 1357. So I think there is a lot of scientific new exciting things that can happen, and so we are working with that. The idea is to create smart platforms, but this is a very tiny, tiny project we are doing for the time being. And one of the things that we want to integrate is an energy harvesting sensor that can look into buildings and bridges and not run out of energy because it uses the vibration energy to power the sensor. And that's what we are trying to do with Vanderbilt University. Not done. We are trying to do. So another part of these smart cities is about emergency vehicles and emergency resiliency and emergency response systems. Again, these are things on the table, and the seismic and infrastructure monitoring is what we are doing. We want to combine the data and have a FEMA-type portal, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA-type portal to make certain the city, the people, the administration, the mayor's office, fire, water, ambulance is aware of where the events are happening. Transportation. So this is the first project. We have submitted about a $20 million proposal to the U.S. Department of Transportation. These are some of the companies and universities that are involved. Enterprise Web is a tiny startup. GAWA is Kathleen Fisher's company. Kathleen ran Hackams at DARPA. Micro MSFT is Microsoft. MIT NI is National Instruments. RTI is a small company for real-time innovations that uses DDS, Data Distribution Service. Tech Mahindra is a fairly large company that you have not heard about. It's an Indian company, and Vanderbilt University, Janos Stepanovic, which most of you know. So, again, you can see all of the proceedings. We have been working on this for about almost a year. We have just submitted the proposal. And basically, the proposal, again, this is a more detailed idea of the people. The proposal is structured with security, connected vehicle applications, application framework, the connectivity platform, device platform, cloud platform, and safety. So MIT is contributing to the new safety algorithms. Transformation Network is a very large contractor, works with the DOT. They are actually going to deploy the connected vehicle application. Vanderbilt, Janosch's group, with the help of other people, are going to create the framework. Security is, we are working with RTI, VeriSign, and GAWA. Device platform with Arada Systems that has actually implemented some of the new test beds for the Department of Transportation. And there is DSML, domain-specific modeling languages. There's a lot of ontological work involved in this particular framework. There's connectivity platform, absolutely critical. If this connectivity platform doesn't work, there will be no intelligent transport systems, security, and deployment. So in deployment, we are using these transponders and these intelligent devices. And this is the one that was used by Carnegie Mellon by Raj Rajkumar. As you can see, this is in Washington, D.C. So if you walk around the Capitol building, you will actually see these systems that are installed, which talks to the cars. That's the infrastructure that's talking to the intelligent vehicle. The deployment is in Owosso, Michigan, and didn't put in. So basically, Owosso, Michigan is a tiny county here. The reason is right here, which you cannot see, I should have put it on the other slide, is Detroit. And that's where Department of Transportation has a very large test bed. So we have one that's very close. Okay, so yeah, we are expecting the award decision to be made sometime in the August-September framework. If we get the award, it will be a 4.5-year project that we will start to completely convert the city of Owosso and the county of Owosso and all of its cars, all of its people, into an intelligent connected vehicle system. There are other competing groups, Carnegie Mellon, who became a competitor after working with us, Caltrans from California, UT Austin for the I-35 corridor, Virginia Tech, VTTI. So there are a number of other competitors, and they will make 3 or 4 awards. We have submitted one for a very large award. There will be combinations of large and small. So this is what has happened. This is part two. This was supposed to be part one. This was my suggestion for part one, but it was not within the scope of the appropriations that created the funding that came out, and unfortunately, we couldn't do this. So very quickly, what we are trying to do is semi-autonomous transportation. So we all know about Tesla upgrading software. So this is what we are trying to do. Drive to anywhere, drive from anywhere. So the idea is that a truck driver can sit at home and drive a truck. The first mile, the truck from a congested city, can be taken out onto the road by a person. Then on the road, on the highway, the truck driver sitting wherever they're sitting, they can open their laptop, drive that truck, because that solves the problem of insurance. Insurance wants the human to be responsible. And then when it arrives at another very congested hub, there is another person who can take over the truck and make certain that all of the National Highway Transportation safety rules, the insurance requirements are met. So this is in between where we want to go. We want to go to autonomous, but this is in between. The other scenario we are pursuing is that Ram is sitting here and Ram's daughter is in New York and says, I need to go to the ballet class. You're not home. So Ram can open his laptop, say, go sit in the car. Daughter sits in the car and Ram can drive the car from his laptop to the ballet class. Daughter finishes ballet, gets in the car, can be driven back. So those are the two things we are pursuing now. There's a lot of people with whom we are pursuing. They're listed here. You can look at it. So that's about transportation. We're thinking about precision farming testbed. Now, obviously, it says what we are thinking. So we have not done this. This is what we are embarking on. So we are doing the precision farming testbed mostly because of the NASA soil moisture satellite that was recently released. The NASA Soil Moisture Satellite map can give you, like GPS, exact soil moisture content anywhere in the world. So we are trying to figure out how to use that data and help farmers, wine growers, people like that. So this is a project we are undertaking we are thinking that we are going to embark on. We want to do a project, and this is a discussion that's going on with a Danish company, Grundfos, and people in the European Union. So we want to look into how can we address some real problems in the world using IoT, IOS. So this is what happens, as you can see from the feet and the hands. This is what happens in Bangladesh because of arsenic in their water. And as you can see from the token photograph I've shown you there from Nokia and a sensor, we actually do have a mechanism to try to connect this. And we have nanofiltration developed by Rohit Karnik at MIT that might be able to get rid of some of the arsenic. So there are things that we'd hope to do. Again, this has tremendous socioeconomic impact, and we are working also with Partners in Health. Partners in Health is a major charity in Boston. Partners in Health was founded by Jim Kim, and if you know, if you remember, Jim Kim is now the president of World Bank. So Jim and myself, we were both fellows in medicine at Mass General Hospital in the mid-1980s. So there is a relationship there, and we are trying to see what we can do to bring IoT in that domain. So healthcare, that brings us to healthcare. One of the closest alliances we have is with the Medical Device Interoperability Program at Mass General at Harvard Medical School. I've been involved there for 2 decades. So this is where we are looking into ontology. And because semantic interoperability between EHRs and EMRs are the reason why one doctor system from one hospital cannot talk to another person. So there are many parts of healthcare. The ontology, the healthcare platform is only one part. We haven't done anything on genomics or precision medicine, but that's also where we are thinking that we are going to look into biosensors and imaging and genome, because that is a part of precision medicine. But we have done nothing about it. We have done some things with ICE Alliance and MDPNP program at Mass General. So these are, again, ideas we are thinking about connecting the variables. So another thing that we are doing is we are looking for money. So we are looking for published funding calls. These are in the EU. Some of these are in the US. And we are trying to respond to some of these calls and trying to propose what it is that we can do. Obviously, there's a lot of lag time. And I won't explain this slide. You can read it if you wish to. There's a lot of lag time. So let me now move for the next 10 minutes, and then I'll try to stop, into some things that I think that this group is absolutely the perfect place to talk about this. So I am going to skip a lot of the things. So I've explained why systems, and I've explained more things. We are about grand platforms, and these grand platforms must have OS inside, which is open standards, open source. So we are looking into grand standards and things like that, and there are various ecosystems, functional ecosystems. Let me point out one thing. This is amount of data we are generating. This is a study that gives you an idea of the helabytes of data. Helabyte is 10 to the power 27. That's a new designation created by Facebook. So 10 to the power 27, this is tremendous amount of data. So now, the next 1 billion people are going to be entirely mobile. there is no dead weight of old technology in Africa, India, China, Indonesia, Brazil. These places do not have what in the US-centric thinking or European-centric thinking you have. So the thinking has changed. So I spoke at Mitsubishi through the Mitsubishi Executive Board a few weeks ago. And they said, you know, we paid so much money. This was an internal discussion. They said, we paid so much money for the Harvard students to come in and talk about innovation, and we got nothing out of it. That's because the needle has moved. The old way of thinking about business has changed. And you may like it, may not like it, but that's the reality. So look at this survey. I also teach in the business school and in engineering school. So this is from one of my business school teaching things. So the survey says, my mobile phone will be my purchasing tool. Look at the dead weight of old technology, Denmark, Belgium, UK. How many people said that that will be their tool? And then look at in India and China. Strongly disagree. A third of the people, more than a third of the people, Belgium, Denmark, they strongly disagree the mobile phone. Now look at the demographics of those countries. The demographics in Denmark and these countries, people are, average age of people are approaching 55. The mean age of India is 23.1. The mean age of China is 39.2. And they are saying, a quarter of the people strongly agree they will be the mobile, will be their purchasing tool. But then you have to ask the second question. How many hours at a minimum wage do they must work to pay for a 500 megabyte mobile data plan? Okay? So there's two sides to it. Obviously, there is the mobility, and then there is PPP, purchasing power parity. So there is the economics of the system. So that's why platforms are important. I am going to very quickly move away, and I have given you this tremendous amount of information as to why it is necessary. I am going to go into healthcare very quickly, because this is what's happening with healthcare. The parrot is nearly dead or is on IV with all the dollars getting infused. So this is a grand challenge, Internet of Systems, all of this. So let me give you something that hasn't happened, although I proposed it long time back. I have done nothing about it because this is not my work, but I brought two things together, a glucose nanosensor with a nanotube radio. If you combine them, you'll have a nanosensor inside your body, transmitting data outside your body. Things are possible. And, you know, you can remotely monitor somebody. This was from 2005. This was a discussion I had in 2005 explaining this to the Prime Minister of Ireland. So that's Bertie Ahern, a couple of prime ministers before at Ireland, so explaining to him why this can happen. So these ideas, some of you may know some of the people here, how we can reduce healthcare costs if you can bring these things to do this. So this is about medical pancreas. This is what I call the paper pee home health. Every time you pee, if you want your pee to be evaluated, pay. That's the new business model, micro revenue. There is no macro revenue. So this paper pee wireless home health, this is the dashboard of a toilet in Taiwan. You can do anything sitting on the throne from this dashboard. So I've written a book chapter on this, published in 2008. If you're interested, you can look at it. In Walgreens, we will have mammograms, DEXA scans, and we need to connect the Walgreens mammogram DEXA scan with the milk that you're buying, because there's a correlation between osteoporosis and DEXA scan. So I have discussed these things. So this is what obviously we are doing with Julian Goldman. This is his medical device interoperability, and I am going to go, and there are a variety of things from the AVM component model that's been done by Janos Stefanovic's group, ISIS, at Vanderbilt, that can actually help. So we are actually submitting a NSF grant on that in the next few days, I'm hopeful. So let me move on to this. And so this was about Ebola, what we did with Julian for the White House call for Ebola and robotic. Again, there's a lot of stuff behind. But let me, so this is, if you know, this is Karen DeSalvo. So what's the role of ONC in semantic interoperability between healthcare systems? Apparently, there is no role. So big data is a marketing hype. We know that. And this is from Michael Stonebreaker. Thursday, I was at MIT talking to Michael. And Michael said, I've been doing this for the past 30 years of my life. So he just won the Turing Award. I want to get to absolutely. There are about 3,000. Yeah, the bit.ly, MIT-IoT, they're all will be available. They're all various stories that I have given details of if you're interested. So this is what's happening. Paper analytics. Every data, every piece of data, doesn't matter what data, healthcare data, machine data, your data about your plumbing system, data about the grocery in your refrigerator, data about the tire pressure in your car, every data will become value, will add value as an analytical tool, as analytics, and people will pay for it. So look at what happened. Samsung, the phone manufacturer, paid $50 million to UCSF, University of California School of Medicine in San Francisco. Why? Because Samsung wants UCSF to develop analytical tools for data, healthcare data. UCSF, very renowned place. So this is the way the world is changing, and this change is tremendously hampered by lack of semantic interoperability in open source health data platform. And I had this discussion with Ram, and he basically told me that it will not happen. It cannot be done. And he may be right, but, you know, I'm very foolish, which you will soon gather if you see all the stuff on my site. So I am rushing ahead. I am pursuing this in a variety of ways, in a variety of ecosystems, with a variety of connections, very powerful people, saying this has to be done. We have to create an open source EHR, EMR integrated home healthcare prescription network integrated HL7, ICD-10 integrated open health data platform. So we are pursuing this, and maybe I'll fail, and maybe I'll die before we succeed, but that's perfectly fine. So we have been thinking about this, or at least I, and so this is from Ram. He very nicely explained what is an ontology, so I don't need to explain that. I will explain this. because this is what we started at the MIT Data Center that I co-founded in 2004. And we didn't go anywhere. We didn't get anywhere because we were stopped by Tim Berners-Lee. Obviously, most of you know who he is, and so you can deduce the rest of it. However, the paper is on the has been on the MIT working site, my paper on this topic, and it was published despite it was put up by MIT after review despite his objections. It was published despite his objections. It's in the public domain. Google, Yahoo, other his objections. Okay, you'll soon see why he's objecting. Okay, let me give you the bottom line. He objected because, let me actually summarize. My fundamental idea is here. So a mirror, when you talk about mirror, the context of the word mirror defines your use of the word mirror, right? It could be philosophical. It could be a reflection. It could be a noun. It could be an object. It could be a metaphor. It could be an observatory, a mirror in an observatory. If we do not understand context, we cannot make a decision. And Google proved it correct. How? Google, with all of its hubris, said that we don't need the CDC to predict when there will be an epidemic of flu. We can do that using Twitter data, right? So Google said that. Everybody clapped. We don't need anybody. We can just use data through algorithms. Algorithms are big data, and outcomes everything. And Google was wrong. That paper came out in Nature because Nature is something scientists read. So it's a political irresponsibility of the system, or the political, what should I say, the lack of political ability of scientists that failed to tell people in the media that Google was not correct about it. CDC came out, and CDC's predictions were far more correct because they took into consideration context. So if you want to talk about context, and if semantics is still, if ontologies are still going to be defined by syntax, you cannot get that syntax as words to be recognized by computers. So what I have done here, and this is the paper that you can read, I have digitized semantics. When I say I have digitized semantics means I have only proposed. I have done nothing really. I have just proposed what it can be. And I'm quite certain it's not exactly the way, even if it happens, it's not going to happen exactly this way, but maybe somebody will think about it based on this very audacious and maybe even obscene suggestion that takes something as high and mighty as ontology and semantics and digitize. So what I have done at the bottom, where you can see the string of numbers, I have mapped, again, arbitrarily, I have mapped the context of the word mirror to a format in IPv6, Internet Protocol version 6. Why? Remember the key word here is format. IPv6 is a 128-bit structure, which means it has 34 octillion possibilities of unique addresses. So can we provide an unique address to one of the context of a word? So mirror philosophy may have, as I have shown you, something 0.889C. So if we take a particular segment of the IPv6 type of a format, can we make that particular segment or subsegment where we start defining in digital space what is the context? And this is what my paper is about, and this is what the semantic W3C and the semantic group, which is based out of MIT, obviously, I said absolutely absurd. This cannot happen because you cannot have digital semantics. And What I suggested is that we need to have a sub-layer to the URI where you will have some sort of a mechanism which will serve as a bottom mechanism where all of these unique contextual digital information will reside so that RDF and other things, resource discovery frameworks, can come and look at context, digital context. And because it's a namespace, unique namespace, you can keep adding unique things in there because the Chinese, the Japanese, the Indians, the Americans, the Europeans are not going to agree on ontological framework. And that's the biggest problem in having semantic interoperability between databases, between structures, between EHRs, between EMRs. So look at this. Kimono is a shirt. This is an ontology, right? In a Western ontological classification, a kimono is a shirt. Is a shirt, is it a kameez or is it a kimono? Kimono in the Japanese classification is a traditional garment. It's not a shirt. How do you resolve this? In a syntactic mechanism within the context of semantics. You cannot. You have to digitize it if you want this context to be understood, applied in real time in a transactional space for intelligent decision support systems. So I have shown, again, you can read the paper, you can see how it is. And here is the problem, semantic ambiguity. So this was a real experiment. This was my student. I teach in Chalmers University in Stockholm, in France, in Taiwan, a variety of places of the world. I teach. So call. I use the word call. And I said to the Chinese students, this is happening in Sweden, in Chalmers University in Gothenburg. I said, when you hear the word call, write down the Chinese version. So they wrote down the Chinese version. Loud cry, animal call, telephone call, house visit. In England, if you go and I said, I called on you, it means you visited somebody's house. Okay? Look at the ambiguity in the same classroom between two Chinese students. And this, obviously, I have no idea about hiragana, katakana, kanji, and all of those pictographic languages. This looks different. And those two students from China couldn't agree on how they should write it. And this is the problem with having words described, because suddenly now here, we are not even in the domain of words. This is the problem if you take omics in cell biology. So this is a lymphocyte. I know something about a lymphocyte, done 15 to 20 years of biomedical research. How do you understand cell differentiation, blood cell lymphocyte? How would you use an information system, an intelligent information system, to read data from a pathological lab with a potential case of AML? That's myelocytic leukemia. You cannot. And if you have this sort of a system where the system is based still on words. Am I the only person who did it? No. Where did I get the idea from? Goes back to MIT. So this is the first paper on the MIT website by Dan Engels. And Dan created this system called the Graticule Coordinate Code. And again, the paper, the reference is there. You can go and look at it. Same idea. What Dan did, he was trying, this was before RFID and electronic product code. Dan was trying to figure out, can we define where an object is in the earth? He used latitude, longitude, and altitude. Look at the way he set it up. A specific namespace, a digital space, where you have certain quadrants for certain pieces of information, and you create an unique address out of it for that specific object. Same idea what we did in RFID for the electronic product code. Same idea what IPv4 did, and I have had this discussion with Bob Hinden, Robert Hinden, who created or was one of the people who created IPv6. And according to Bob Hinden, according to Peter Norvig at Google, Charles Simony at Microsoft, who has the new company Intentsoft, various people have said, yes, there is something here. And I can show you from my experience, from the people I have been involved with, there is something in the organization. I used IPv6 because it's something I knew. I knew the formatting of it, and I knew where the empty spaces still exist in IPv6 that can be used for context of data, not just data alone. And just because it is IPv6 doesn't mean it needs to be routed. And I've discussed this again in the paper. I have a whole slew of stuff. So semantics, data dictionaries, and billing codes. So we need to have open source, open standards, and this is probably one of the things we're going to fight on for quite some time in the healthcare field. I think I'm just going to leave you at that and remind you that if you go to bit.ly/MIT-IoT, you will find many of these things there, and you're welcome to download. Or you can go to MIT-SD. That's a whole slew of papers in the MIT library that I have. It's MIT-SD for Showman data. That gives you all the stuff that's in the MIT library. Thank you for your time. I would love to take some questions if you have some time. And if I've offended anybody, please forgive me, because I know this has been something very, very from the left field.
Again, thank you very much, Shaman. Do you have any questions for Shaman? Mm-hmm. We have about 5 to 10 minutes or so. Microphone for the.
On your OWASA case with your automobiles, you said you're going to link all the automobiles. I have a suspicion that a lot of people won't want their automobiles.
All of the people in OWASA has signed a document with the mayor saying they all want it to be installed.
Oh, really? They've agreed. Wow. Okay.
Yes, about 4,400 households have all signed an agreement.
Okay, I'm surprised.
Yeah, exactly. You will be surprised what people actually want. It's only those people who sit in the armchairs in various boards in various places in Washington that do not think out of the box. The real people are actually thinking out of the box. So, yes. Yes.
The consortium you referenced several times, do they have any specific projects regarding security?
Yes, there are working groups on security, and the IIC is working with the NIST Public Working Group, CPS, the NIST Cyber Physical System Public Working Group, and IIC groups are co-tethered together. So, yes, absolutely, there are security working groups, and we hope to start a security project, but there are working groups. Yes.
Tina. Okay, thanks. So you were talking about platforms. How do you define platform? What's included? How do you add new devices? And have you ever tried to link two platforms together?
Right. So those are the definition of a platform is that where you can aggregate multiple services, multiple objects, multiple devices, multiple sensors. So that's a platform where the data. Our most important concern is to make the data available for free to anybody who wants to use it, obviously within the limits of privacy, security, and the guidelines. So a platform means it's a data platform where you can put in all of the variety of things in an ecosystem together so that you don't make a decision in a silo. You make a decision based on contextual information from multiple systems. And that is generally what we mean when we say platform. Connecting two platforms, yes, obviously there are people who use things like, you know, they use APIs to connect platform. So there's a lot of patchwork quilt mechanism in platforms. And it's not going to be the end of it. It will continue to do that. But sometimes platforms cannot be connected. For example, Epic EHR system or EMR system cannot talk to the system in at Harvard, which was just sold to Athena Healthcare System. It cannot talk to the VA system. So Epic is a very big system. There are a lot of users. Doesn't talk to these things. So what's happening is that their semantic...
It can talk, but their system cannot understand.
Right, exactly. It can talk, it cannot understand, because the semantic data dictionaries are not public. They're proprietary data dictionaries.
So I'm a little bit familiar with healthcare work. You know, we're engaged sort of tangentially in a EHR aggregation project with a couple major systems. And I would argue, actually, that the, you know, standardization and consensus on semantics isn't really the issue. Right? So to me, healthcare is one of the most endlessly ontologized domains in the world, right? And that's everything from academic ontologies to, you know, semi-industrial ontologies like gene ontology to super serious ontologies, which, you know, the ICDs, the code books, all these kind of things ultimately are, right? So there are tons of standards that are actually public, right? All the ICDs, all these kinds of things, they are not open source in the sort of computing world sense, but clearly those are public standards with well understood semantics and, you know, large scale consensus on the meaning, and yet none of these things work.
Right. So what you exactly pointed out is a problem. It is not about reinventing standards, but making certain that there is interoperability between standards. So that is really the crux of it. I am absolutely never going to advocate one standard because it's absolutely insane depending on the multitude of systems that we will be touching. But we need to figure out a way to make those standards interoperable. They need to talk and understand.
So,
let me,
before that, go on.
Yeah, we have to
We'll just clarify on Joe's statement. I guess the statement is, you don't think in healthcare, in semantic interoperability is a problem.
No, I think the semantic interoperability issues in healthcare are huge. But the issue isn't a lack of ontologies or a lack of well-defined and consensus-derived ontologies, you know, whatever form that may take. I think the problems are elsewhere, right? So whether that is a lack of standardization on, say, integration algorithms and mechanisms by which things can be brought together, or probably ultimately more likely if it's essentially a business problem of incentives and, you know, the economic models of how all these systems operate, their context that fosters that forced non-interoperability.
Yeah, there is not one single problem. It's a collection.
No, there are just a couple of questions online. So Ravi Sharma and then Peter Yen.
Can somebody hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Dr. Datta. I hope that's the right way to pronounce. I joined a little late. So there are two, three questions. You mentioned the standards, but fortunately you did clarify that you are looking into IPv6. But I think things would be beyond ICD-10. Things would be beyond current versions of EPIC. Would be beyond a lot more new things we would need to be able to integrate these embedded body and nanosensors. I'm going to take just the example of healthcare, although you touched on many. where either you have to rewrite current applications, go with new standards. What is your view on new standards that are required at the bare minimum for us to use wearable and embedded inside the body devices?
I have absolutely no intelligent framework to give an answer to that question because it is completely up in the air. All I do is I get people who know about things together in a room. So I don't know. I cannot give you that answer. It's all of the above. There is not going to be one shoe fits all. So we cannot have any one prescription for success for the question that you just asked. There are very different standards when it comes to wearables in the United States versus the European Union versus India and China. So there are going to be different applications, different levels of interoperability, different levels of data sharing that comes in as soon as we open the home healthcare, the mobile health, the wearable domain. So I have absolutely no idea how that's going to change in the very same way that, you know, we have very little predictive ability on how Facebook or Uber has come about and how they change the market. So there will be lots of drivers, and we need to look into the markets where wearables might become an important part. And these markets are mostly in Asia, where we will see people using them in certain ways. But some of the basic ideas are being developed in US and Europe. So it's going to be a lot of combination. I do not have a good answer to your question.
I will provide a very quick simile, ICAO versus FAA for aviation, because aircraft have to travel among countries. So similarly, I thought your organization was the driver of common interoperability standards, just as any aircraft from Germany can land in the U.S.
The IIC is not a standards organization. So,
but what is it? What is it? I meant, where do you see an organization developing such standards coming up? Through the UN or somewhere else?
I doubt very much it's going to be the UN. The ITU is not very well. I don't know. Let me just say I don't know.
Okay, and thanks, Ravi.
Thanks.
Peter?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Dr. Data, thank you very much for the great talk. I'm very interested in your proposal in the use of IPv6 in as a UID for conceptual related elements. Actually, this is very similar to a discussion I had at George Strawn's office about probably late 2009, along with Bill Turnbull, I believe Susie Iacono was there. Which paper can I read from you that better describe what you're proposing?
Right. So if you go to MIT-IoT,
I'm there.
That's bit.ly/MIT-IoT.
Yeah.
You will see this talk, and there is a link in that talk. Alternatively, when you go there, you will find my email address. Send me an email address, and I will send you the link, because that paper is also on the Engineering Systems Division of MIT.
Okay. Can you call out the title of the paper?
Oh, it is called Unified Theoretic, it is UTRI, I'm myself forgetting the title. It's a Unified Theory of Relativistic Identification.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Great talk.
I think we need to kind of stop now. And again, thank you very much, Sam,
thank
for the enlightening talk. And I guess a lot of people are going to follow up with you on this. So we have, 15 minutes break now. Okay. So we have coffee, donut, we have bagels. Please help yourself.
So, yeah, we will be reconvening in 15 minutes at 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Ask a question of the chairs.
Yeah, go ahead, Peter.
You probably have to break up your phone conference to four-hour chunks.
That's right.
When are we breaking? Should we call back in after this break or after lunch?
So we're just taking a short 15-minute break, and then we have track A and track B, and then we break for lunch. So there'll be two. There's the morning recording and the afternoon recording.
Good, great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, everyone, we are going to start soon. Leo? So this is the first track, track A. And let me see if we can see the slides right here. Yeah. So we'll be briefing you on track A. For those of you on the phone. Yeah, fun? Yeah. The slide numbers here?
Yeah, there won't be.
Maybe, okay. So this is the summary of track A, which is about ontology integration in the Internet of Things. Leo and I are the co-champions of this, and Leo has kindly agreed to talk about it to summarize this. And thank you very much, Leo. I know there are a lot of things going on during the weekend, and actually Leo was working on this live until, I don't know, midnight. So, Leo, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Is this a slide?
I think this is probably supposed to be a pointer. I'm not sure. I don't see anything coming up. Yeah, there's something coming up from here. Anyone see anything on the screen? Yeah.
I'll just use page down there. Okay. Yeah, thank you, folks. We're on slide two. So a lot of this information you've obviously seen throughout the course of the Ontology Summit in the last three months or so, the virtual session. Track A is focused on basically interoperability and integration issues. So our goal for this was to address these issues. In the meantime, we had case studies. Some of our speakers brought up of the Internet of Things. We discussed some various approaches, which we'll talk about, integration, interoperability. We also provided some notion of gaps in those approaches. One thing that we were more interested in, but you know, we kind of left it rather underdeveloped, was the notion of vertical integration, interoperability, especially granularity issues. So there's so much to cover that we really couldn't get into any detail in granularity issues, but I think if the Internet of Things and use of ontologies to assist in the integration of these things, you'll need more and more notions of granularity. And then we propose methods for achieving integration, interoperability using ontologies, and we wanted to address a unified framework for multimodal interfaces, for example, but again, this is rather underdeveloped too. We're on slide three. So we provided some terminology, and largely this is reflected in the current communique. This was mostly from Ram, Sriram, who was addressing some of these notions. And so we thought, well, let's get these things defined. So everything from the Internet of Things itself, to a certain extent, but also things like cyber-physical systems, cyber-physical human systems, and social systems, or what we're calling smart network systems and societies. Now, we all know that in recent years in ontology, applied ontology, that complex systems, social technical systems have become more and more pronounced We saw this a couple years ago with the big systems ontology summit, and of course issues in big data too, which was last year's summit. The technical challenge obviously requires trusted, secure, reliable, interoperable computing environment. View of that as a net-centric system, internet-centric, and requires application of diverse and robust requirements and infrastructures for the benefit of all the society. So we have social networks and, you know, everything that we've used in the past now comes into play in the Internet of Things, too, in terms of not just the things that exist out there, but the software, the social network environments that we all participate in, and, you know, obviously at the bottom, a range of sensors. So this requires standard terminologies. We expect that there'll be more and more ontologies that are being used, some very locally, to specific sets of sensors, and some others in more complex, higher granularity, perhaps, or more general ontologies that span some of these subnetworks of sensors. And we have to worry about creating testing these terminologies. Slide five. So we've talked about case studies, and we'll mention a few that our speakers have, you know, addressed, and approaches, gaps, methods for integration. So slide six, here were our Track A speakers, Dr. Steve Ray. I don't know if he's online. He's West Coast, so it's possible he couldn't make it here. Dr. Payam Barnaghi, University of Surrey, Jack Hodges, Siemens Berkeley Lab, Ram, Sri Ram, and NIST here, and Dr. Spencer Briner and Swaran Subramanian of CMU and NIST. I think Swaran is also temporarily at NIST. And Dr. Christoph Janowitz, University of California, Santa Barbara. So some of the case studies that were brought up, Steve Ray brought up sensor integration. And also a smart grid. Steve has been working smart cities in the past, so that's kind of a natural extension for him. Smart healthcare, and we see that there's more and more healthcare applications, including medical devices in the Internet of Things. So Jack Hodges and Ram brought this up. And then a more general framework for the Internet of Things that Dr. Barnaghi developed. So we're on slide eight, current approaches to integration and interoperability. One that I see my typo is still in there, I think it's HyperCat, right? Some punctuation seems to not take sometimes. So the approach, the HyperCat approach, which was based on basically annotations, metadata. So it, in effect, it's a way of cataloging servers and their resources to provide some simple semantics. And then simple mapping is another alternative. Steve Ray brought up manually mapping JSON entities to target ontologies. Inference-based mapping that Steve brought up, and also to some extent Christoph Janowitz. In other words, mappings that can be achieved using rules and an inference engine, if you want to consider the usual mappings that we may do in owl-based ontologies, equivalence mappings, well, and now enabling some of that mapping to take place through through reasoning engines. And then, of course, that's more traditional combining existing ontologies that we've used in the past, which is labor-intensive in many cases, and you you basically have to do the hard work of linking, importing ontologies and then linking them to the concepts that you want to use the imported ontology. So, and a range, obviously, quantities, units, dimensions, semantic sensor networks, et cetera, human disease, the OBOE ontologies, and so forth. Slide 9. So some pictures, for example, a hyper cat from Payam's slides, where you you basically have semantically annotated data, and you're using essentially a catalog approach so that the resources are cataloged, and servers provide this information to clients. And you could just think of this catalog as an array of URIs with annotations, so RDF-like triples. Slide 10. Another kind of method, if you will, just elaborating some of the things that we've methods we've just mentioned. Simple manual mapping, so a range from simple manual mappings to inference-based ontology mapping. So Steve Ray brought up some examples here where he is essentially mapping from JSON into ontologies and using tools such as, you know, TopRaid Composer to and some of the extensions that that tool has to automate the process. So the idea is, and of course it's a semi-automated process, but what Steve wanted to do was to reduce it as much as possible to minimal manual steps. And that's, of course, of interest to us and more generally. Jack Hodges talked about combining existing ontologies, and he really didn't want to do automatic matching mapping simply because, you know, it's never 100%, which we all agree that it's kind of a semi-automatic. There's always requiring humans in the loop because the humans understand much better than the systems and our software what the semantics of two things are that you want to integrate. But Jack said that for, you know, really for you have to check these things, these mappings anyways, by subject matter experts. So you really get humans in the loop anyway, so you might as well, you know, provide human support when you do the mappings. And he has some examples then from wearable devices and so forth coming out of healthcare. Slide 12, we looked at some, we found some gaps, and our speakers mentioned some of these gaps. For example, that almost all systems are in prototype stages. We lack semantic annotation tools. We do have some tools for validating ontologies, but again, they're require some expertise in the use of the tools. So much like ontology development, you know, requires a lot of knowledge about ontologies and the logic, underlying logic, and other semantic technologies. The tools for validating ontologies still can't be really directly used by subject matter experts, unless they have a fair amount of training. We think there's more work that's needed on representing events. I know this personally because I developed an event ontology for a number of different applications, one of which was intelligence and understanding the kinds of things that are of interest to some of the analysts in the existing world that we live in, events that may be taking place or events that you want to be able to capture before they exist by seeing indications, for example, and also in healthcare. So we're doing a project for the VA, electronic health record, where we're focusing on really issues at the clinical patient-centered environment. So as you might guess, the VA has, you know, complex requirements, many thousands of patients, and they haven't necessarily done a good job yet with some, there's many issues out there, but the emphasis is on developing ontologies, and we're assisting for patients to actually enable them to kind of work with physicians to lay out a plan for their own health care. And as you might guess, that requires many events of various kinds, medication events, interventions of various kinds, devices. The IoT ontologies also need to deal with dynamic time. So we know from our work and obviously in ontologies that an ontology by definition is relatively static. Many times the data, the instances are the things that really change with classes and categories relatively unchanging, but with the Internet of Things, you may have many, many kinds of dynamic kinds of things going on. So it's not just instance level data, but you may have to somehow map two ontologies or two sets of ontologies together relatively dynamically because some subwebs or some subnetworks have to come together for a specific reason and interact, and they haven't in the past. Of course, all of this requires privacy and security issues being addressed. It's very scary if you think about cars being driven automatically and software basically pervading everything in our physical world. The issues with security, malware, cyber warfare of various kinds, and validation, right? So if you want to talk with this ontology, you're in a network of or subnetwork of some Internet of Things. And can you trust this ontology? I mean, maybe it's a mal ontology. you need validation and security to ensure that the ontologies we use are actually appropriate. As we know, mostly there's manual methods for integration. I don't see that as changing very quickly for some time. There's automated acquisition of knowledge about integration, and then, of course, semi-automatic integration. But again, there's not, it'll have to evolve to a large extent because humans are still required for integration. And some approaches for example, to using mathematical methods, as including, for example, category theory. But, of course, there's a lack of implementations for a lot of these tools. We're now on slide 13. So, again, this is a little more detail about these methods for integration interoperability, some of which we've highlighted here, including, you know, encoding for dynamic semantics, where temporal information has to change very quickly. And therefore, for the Internet of Things and for example, events that are taking place very, very quickly in the interactions of the Internet of Things. Related to that is, you know, this both temporal and event-based use of ontologies. So Briner and Subramanian actually came up with a very interesting approach using category theory, where they develop kind of these connections between models, if you will, in order to do interoperability integration, and you know, formalizing this in terms of category theory, where you can actually map the overlap of these models, these ontologies, and understand the composition of those, so you aggregate semantically, and of course the core notion from category theory that they used was the push out. So it's pretty formal, but it's an interesting application. As we know, in the last 20 years, there's been more and more applications of category theory in computer science software. Also, Christoph brought forward, you know, the use of design patterns, so ontology design patterns, so that you have a kind of ontology virtualization, where you can combine these micro-ontologies because you define maybe simple to more complex patterns that, you know, kind of abstract away from a lot of the detail in highly axiomatized systems, highly axiomatized ontologies, and in effect have little micro theories that then you can extend. And he also mentioned, of course, that this is kind of providing ontological views too. Ontological views, in effect, will become more and more pronounced in the use in ontological engineering, because in many cases, the same ontology, you would probably like to have a particular view into that ontology based perhaps on a certain person's role. We have that in the VA system, the ontology we're developing, where you might, the patient has, in effect, a view into the same ontology, but of course it's pretty different from the physician and other, you know, physical therapists, for example, or pharmacists and so forth. People that have different roles don't want to see the same things. Expanding on some of the techniques presented by Steve Ray and Jack Hodges. Slide 14. Verification, validation, more and more important, as we mentioned, interconnecting the algorithms and the hardware for two existing networks. For example, with respect to you know, for example, medical network and transportation network is difficult, and it requires you know, verification on both sides, and in the process of interconnecting them. And so this is a case where we probably need more and more tools that will enable us to do these things in at least a relatively quickly semi-automated fashion. And, of course, selecting the existing ontologies to bridge the networks, and in many cases, it'll be more than one ontology. And then creating evaluation metrics, you know, based on the strengths and weaknesses of this ontology bridges. And then evaluation metrics, interconnecting the networks, and capturing the capturing those metrics and expanding them as needed. Slide 15. So, Dr. Barnaghi encapsulated some insights, process insights that we thought were very interesting, and I think some remnant of this is in the communique now. So, designing for large scale and providing tools and APIs, obviously needed in the Internet of Things now. Things are vastly more complicated because you have kind of intelligent sensors and intelligent things in the physical world that have some sort of software substrate or superstrate, and then of course ontologies that sit on top of those that provide the semantics. So that they can interact with other networks and other networks, and other devices. And then also thinking about who will use the semantics and how when you design your models. In many cases, it's hard to know upfront exactly how things will be used down the road. So we always have some assumptions built in that may have to be adjusted as it's extended to other uses. Means to update and change the semantic annotation. So PIAM is basically focusing on this cataloging idea and annotating through metadata the semantics for some of these resources. And so needing to update and change that over time. Tools for validation and testing, more use and creation of taxonomies and vocabularies that work with ontologies, trying to reuse existing ones as obviously as much as you can. I mean, that's our we understand that that's the value of ontologies, but it's also the case that there's a number of challenges in that. And then linking your data and descriptions to other existing resources, maybe using rules and or best practices to enable a range of values for any given attribute. So, underscoring the fact that most widespread use of ontologies on the web, at least currently, are the simple ones, like friend of a friend, schema.org, various other ones such as that, which are not very complex, but are sufficient for, you know, associating a lot of information at internet scale. And of course, you know, reminder to us that semantics is only really one part of the solution. You know, we are focused on that, on the ontologies and use of ontologies, but of course you need tools, methods, services, APIs, and probably intelligent agent technology, for example, to provide much of the infrastructure that you need in addition to the ontologies you use. And that's our final slide, a little bit ahead. Have time for
15 minutes for question and
answer. Yeah, we have some questions.
Yeah, now you can spend the next 15 minutes kind of discussing some of these ideas.
Questions?
Okay.
Yes?
Leo, you had on one of your slides dynamic semantics.
Yeah.
But then you talked about events and temporal issues. What did you mean specifically by dynamic semantics? Can you change interpretations or just the semantics of temporal issues?
Yeah, I think the focus of a couple of speakers were we're basically on temporal aspects and event-based. So that kind of dynamic semantics. I mean, there's other notions of dynamic semantics, but I think that's what they intended. It also, you know, we also think that, in effect, when you do integration interoperability among two ontologies, right, you may have to do some sort of interpretation that changes, right, when you bring those two things together. That in itself is a very complex issue. So, yes.
So, Leo, Mike Oswald in the past has talked about different architectures or topologies mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. semantic integration. So we're having an interlingua or some set of interlingua ontologies that all the systems kind of map into and out of again,
mm-hmm.
Or more of a community-based architecture where there are these kind of direct mappings between the ontologies that the different participating systems are using.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see, what kind of architecture or topology would you see with Internet of Things?
Yeah. I mean, this is just a personal opinion, but I think that what you're going to see is you're going to see, in effect, some sort of local context, right, where you're serving some sort of you're trying to solve some problems locally, and so your devices are with respect to your own requirements, and so you'll develop ontologies related to that, and in many cases, if they're the same sensor kind of environments elsewhere, then the same ontologies can be used to model those. But when you want to interact, you're probably going to interact, you may not interact at a low level, you may interact at higher levels, in which case it seems like you need some sort of abstraction layer. We talked in the past about agents or virtual objects, where they have the responsibility for, doing the interpretation over this sub-network or this sub-environment, and enabling them then to map from their lower level ontologies to higher level ontologies. So,
comment on that in terms of the framework, which is what started this whole thing. There are, Leo showed this Internet of Things, social networks and cyber systems and things like that. And these different frameworks are being developed in each one of these areas. For example, NIST has a framework for cyber physical systems, which is coming out. And ontologies are a part of this entire framework, but they don't explicitly state so. On the other hand, Industrial Internet Consortium has a framework, I believe. And they also have a data management framework within this, and ontologies apparently it could be a part of this whole process, and I think they are looking into it. Shamin, you might be able to you have to speak into the microphone there.
Yeah, there's a new group for data management, and ontologies will be something that they will look into. Yeah, and one of the things, primary things I'm going to do is to connect you guys with the data group, because there's no need to reinvent the wheel.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, just to follow up in a concrete way.
Yeah.
So you mentioned event ontology
mm-hmm.
several
mm-hmm.
times.
Yep.
So do you see there being, say, a very few interlingua event ontologies,
mm-hmm.
or do you see
mm-hmm.
every single kind of class of devices having their own event ontology?
Yeah. What I'd like to see, of course, is some sort of common interlingual ontology for events. It may not have the rich detail, but it will have the framework for expressing events, so that if you're working at a very low sensor level, you're still using that framework for describing your events. It's just at a level of granularity that only you're interested in.
Actually, in terms of the statement that was made during the virtual sessions, is that there's going to be a kind of layered approach to this thing, where you have the lower level, upper level ontologies. So you have a core set of ontologies which are useful for a wide range of domains, and each domain can have its own ontology, like the medical domain, the social domains, transportation domain. Each one can have its ontologies, but these ontologies will be subclasses of that lower level ontology. Joe, I guess you are asking.
Really more of a comment. Basically, on the outer side of architecture, I thought in a lot of the virtual discussion was not being made very clear what kind of level of operation people were talking about in doing integration, right? So like sometimes it sort of seems like people are talking about, you know, integrating data that's been collected from sensors, all these kind of things. You know, there's some people talking about integration like at the actual, you know, thing level, when you, you know, your two cars meet at some intersection, how do you integrate and interoperate, right? And those two are hugely different things, especially the smaller down you get compared to the bigger up you get. And that lack of precision, I think, is unfortunate, right? And that's something that probably this whole notion of integration and Internet of Things needs to be very clear about, because there's super different approaches and requirements.
Just think about wearable devices of various kinds, right? Medical devices, embedded medical devices. Well, have to, if you have those in you or on you and you go into a certain environment, you might be actually disrupted, right? So you need to kind of adjust on the fly. And to me, I mean, that's a very difficult problem. I don't know, you know. I expect people are addressing that, but that's very difficult.
Yeah. I think this is Ravi.
Yeah, Ravi, go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes, go ahead.
Leo and Sriram, the items relate to item number 10 on your last slide, 15, but also I have put them on the chat. I have three thoughts going here. Do we need a context matching first? Because suppose first time you are trying to connect into Internet of Things with sensors, with whatever. So the interoperability question, does it require first context matching? Then some kind of, you know, again you talk of syntax and semantic. So those meanings. So after that only then you can exchange data or information. That is the thought process. You want to comment on that?
Yeah. I mean, so I think, you know, right now there's a lot of hand waving, but I think that what you will need are these virtual objects, if you will. So some sort of broker, right, that's responsible for interacting between your subnetwork of things and other subnetworks. And so, to me, that is kind of the context. That broker has to be able to know about the ontology of that realm in that subnetwork. But the broker also has to know about, well, what if I get a request for some kind of information from somebody else? Who do I go to get information about the semantics of that? So, and these things are not really directly Internet of Thing objects. They're more like virtual objects. Brokers are, this is why I brought up the notion of intelligent agents, because we haven't addressed that in many years, but if you recall back, intelligent agents were responsible for knowing about certain domains, but also being able to communicate to other agents. And there's been many frameworks that were developed since we kind of shifted to service-oriented architectures and emphasis on web services. We've lost a lot of that information, but to me, that's still something that's required. You need some sort of broker agent, if you will.
So the CORBA IIOP time frame was when I remember the agents were very proactive and used to do things after the later Internet integration, we lost some of it, I agree. But are there frameworks required for you to say, I am a broker, I can mediate this, I can integrate this, I can interoperate this, or do you do it like case by case as you were trying to describe?
Well, actually, Ravi, on that, I guess you could have potentially brokers into the system, and the brokers can go in and, depending on the context, you do the appropriate mapping. But I think that's kind of a broader issue, and a little more thought as we just to go into that as such, and there are certain frameworks which are addressing those. But I think in the interest of time, actually Gary has one, but then there are two comments. Shaman wants to comment on Leo's comments. So if you want to quickly do that and then go to Gary, or first you want to go to Gary. Okay, Gary, you got the mic.
Okay, so a quick comment on the integration and interoperability topic. That I can imagine an evolutionary path here. We may have many event types ontologies, and they may be appropriate for different types of things that are being sent. So I can imagine sort of neighborhoods of some of these things where a particular event ontology and other things sort of applies. And over time, we learn how to bridge between that and the others. The ultimate goal, based on a bottom-up experience of what we're bridging, would be then a more appropriate higher level or top-down, partially top-down, perhaps topper-down, type of a bridging ontology of events and other things like that. So I imagine a bottom up way of evolving on these might be very useful, as opposed to trying to model the events for all time, one time.
Yeah, so I mean, I think you actually need both. You need a bottom up approach, because a bottom up approach can be something that evolves over time, and you know, you can use automated or semi automated learning methods, machine learning methods to understand how to evolve. But I think you also need, in the meantime, you also need some component that's top down, mainly because, you know, you don't want to end up with, you know, you think of some sort of evolutionary software or something, complete bottom up approach. It may take quite many generations to actually get very high up. So in the meantime, of course, you want to, and you know, the evolution is not going to stop. You want to interact with many kinds of things on Internet of Things. So you just can't wait for bottom up approaches to kind of self evolve. So you need both, I think.
Sherman, quickly, because.
So I think the agents did not go away. We actually have a project right now we are considering, and there are agents, hierarchical agents. So what we are doing right now is we are putting together a project where you have a lot of medical devices. These medical devices are being abstracted with an agent which holds the attributes and characteristics of each device, and then in a very dynamic manner, taking into consideration the semantics of time, because timestamps of medical device data is very critical. How can you reconfigure devices in a patient-centric manner when the patient is moving from an outpatient to an operation theater to an ICU to a ward? So we are creating a system where we are using some of the things from Vanderbilt University, the Meta Tool Suite, which has a semantic backplane which actually holds the attributes, characteristics of individual components. We are abstracting the medical devices, and then on a desktop or laptop, somebody, a nurse or a doctor, can switch out and switch in different devices depending on the state of the patient. So,
oh, wonderful. Thank you. That's very good.
Yeah. So we are looking into that.
Good.
That's a part of our NSF project.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Bob, I would need to go before the next session.
Okay.
Any other quick last minute questions?
So just related to, you know, both agents and integration, you know, setting aside agents as, you know, swarms working together to solve a problem and focusing more on, you know, basically personal agents, you know, doing my tasks, like old school electronic albums type things. I mean, today is essentially, you know, the golden age of that idea, right? Where my phone that I carry around with me all of my all the time has a whole bunch of agents who are monitoring all sorts of things for me. And I think it is a widely recognized problem in the industry producing all these apps and so on that they don't integrate very well, right? So there's a lot of people talking about like deep linking for apps, where basic actions in apps should go directly to other apps, and they don't right now. Right? They pop out the browsers and you get this sort of awkward interface chain. So I think there are a very strong notion of agents in industry, actually. It just doesn't have any real formal basis, and it's certainly not doing any kind of non-trivial integration.
Yeah, I mean, so you think about Siri. Siri came from a kind of a partial agent background. So there's aspects that certain people don't like about Siri, but, you know. And it doesn't really interact with other agents per se, except it gets its data, does its reasoning and so forth, its understanding kind of remotely. But, I think the phones, the watches, these will push a deep need for interoperability issues and probably agents that are responsible for that too. So
there is a DARPA project called the Android Mobile Object, which integrates all the apps, and we are using that DARPA Android Mobile Objects project to create an app for every medical device data and then integrate in a patient-centric way, located for one patient, so that all of the apps of all of the devices can be viewed in terms of how is the patient, not what is the data.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, folks. Okay, so...
Go ahead, next one.
Okay, so where is it? Is it on the machine here or what?
It's under the browser.
Oh, it's just on. Okay. Okay.
Good. So that's me, Gary Bergcross. I'm the co-champion of Track B along with Austin Hammond, who may be online, was not able to be here today. So our track was entitled Beyond Semantic Sensor Network Ontologies. You see a little bit on this first slide. I have to remember to read off the slide numbers. Some of them are hard, you can't see. On this first slide, you see a graphical representation of the IoT, the Internet of Things. On the right, you see a little bit of a step towards ontological formulation about these things. And you notice that it has some of the beyondness of this title, which is the idea that we're starting with the sensor signals, and we're moving towards integration of these signals and data into more abstract things or aggregated types of things, understanding those connections in a way. The ontologies are helping here. And then you essentially can know something more about the interaction of some of these observed entities down below. Let's see. Okay, this works. So here is a four-part outline for what we'll be talking about today. Again, like Leo said earlier, this is largely a recapitulation of some of the synthesis presentations that you might have heard or seen earlier on in the track monthly, weekly meetings. So starting out with a little bit of overview and then listing some of the speakers. We had a very interesting and vigorous group of speakers. Then the bulk of the material will be on the synthesis of some of the things that were made there. Essentially sort of two parts there of the evolving ontologies that sort of connect to and build on the semantic sensor network type of things, and then how to modify these dynamically with some of the types of things that were talked about before, such as aligning them and reusing things and that so forth. And there's also one of our major aspects was alluded to to by Leo in the discussion of you have this sort of local neighborhood of agents and sensors doing things, and they can know something about each other as opposed to more of a top-down that sort of maybe knows the network as a whole. So we have those alternate approaches to it. And finally, just a note or two on tools. So to start, the introduction, again, we know the IoT vision pretty well. We have a little bit of a diagram here on the right showing a neighborhood of sensors that's described by some people in terms of a context. So there are these various developing ideas about networks of sensors. Context is one of them, and integrators are another of those. So we know that sensors play a big central role, an embedded role within IoT. And we've learned some things about it. Obviously, there are big data challenges, and there's the issue of heterogeneity of sensor types and the types of data that's being produced, so that the semantic sensor network approach gives us a start on some of these issues like heterogeneity, where we can try to work on it within the sensor realm, and maybe some of these things will be applicable and helpful at other parts of the IoT topic as a whole. One of the things, for example, that we can leverage is the experience of modular ontologies, again, an ontology design pattern that Leo again mentioned before, which is that this semantic sensor network itself was an integration of different approaches. They were put together modularly, and the idea was it was built to be modularly extended so that there are connection points to things like event ontologies. They did not formalize a single event ontology as part of that, recognizing, however, that's a very important part of sensors sensing events that are going on. So it's essentially built for extensibility. That's one of the lessons about it. And then beyond the initial approach shows some ways in which people have connected and extended it. One other thing about, I guess, in terms of the scope was the idea of smart sensors, smart agents. That's another thing that sort of comes out of this effort. So here is a slide that overviews our 10 speakers. We had 9 topics and 10 speakers because we had the one that had 2 speakers. Starting with the first session where we had 3 essentially presentations. I provided one. We couldn't get another speaker who could overview things. So I took on the topic of trying to sort of frame some of the issues in that presentation. Then we had, as also part of our start, we wanted to have some things that were IoT work that may not have gone into ontologies, but provided some of the basis for some of the things that people were looking at, so that we wanted to see how well we've done on that. So that was provided by Jeff Voess of NIST. And that was followed then by essentially our keynote speaker for our first session, which was Corey Henson, who had the appropriate title of Past, Present, and Future Perspectives, who set up this so provided a good basis for understanding SSNO, where it came from, how it was integrated, the modularity of it, where it was now, and where he thought it was going, which was something that our next group of speakers was able to build on. We had more people, but we were able to manage. There were more people able to speak the second session than the first session, and we were able to shoehorn that in because they were all good and were able to speak succinctly. We started with a little bit of a different thing by Chuck Vardaman from Notre Dame, who may be online here. He couldn't be here today, but I know of his interests and what he talked about, which is something that was developed at what's called a vocabulary camp, VoCamp, that I run here in D.C., and is also we have others around the country at times. We just finished one up in Santa Barbara. We run those at least twice a year. And so one of these things was to take the SSN and to look at another aspect of data, which is computationally generated data for model comparisons, so that in many areas you get actually measurements and you're comparing them to your models over here. And so he talked about a small pattern that was being developed for that, and one of the things about it was that he'd be interested in having a hackathon on that if that's of interest to people. So that's one thing that's out there. Our second speaker, Ingo Simonis, spoke about OGC sensor web and semantics, and indeed we wanted to have that topic as part of our first session as a base, because those are important services that are provided, and so Ingo provided that at our second session. And then we had a very interesting presentation from Konstantinos Kostis, which was perhaps the most ambitious in terms of future-oriented and directions from where we are to where we might be going. So he was talking about unknown IoT entities. That is to say that there would be things that would be put out there, and the environment on IoT might be changing so dynamically that we wouldn't necessarily quite know what it was going to sort of work with and what the environment for it would be. So he wanted to, he talked about ways of dynamically refining ontologies and aligning them. Again, it fits very much into the track A presentation on integration. So that's one of the directions, and he talked about the types of standards that you need there. Jean-Paul Calamante talked about the developing a sensor data stream. So it's sort of an extending RDF to, from data to data streams, and so he went into great detail on that. And Thorsten Hammond and his partner Sylvia Nattel, that's why we have 10 speakers rather than 9 for 9 topics, spoke about some of these conceptualizations or abstractions that you make from sensors, so that the topic there would an example of the topic there would include the idea of having a meeting like this and having sensors sort of knowing by your phones and other things what's going on. We have video, we have audio, and that type of thing. But having more abstract concepts of this is a discussion phase, this is a presentation phase, this is a break, this is a work group together. So there are various abstract social abstractions that you want to make beyond the sensors that sort of help you understand the interrelationship of what's going on, what you're hearing and seeing. And finally, we fit in Barry Smith, who was I think might have presented at one or two of the other sessions, but this was the one he could make. And we made a very good connection here to the biomedical realm, which has been talked about several times. And he showed us some of the ontologies that they are developing and how to bring them together for this area. So that was what was covered. So now to talk a little bit about the synthesis of that, and I started on that a little bit. So the first slide here is just, if we're going beyond SSN, what is it? This doesn't say that, I guess, the way I did this slide. It just talks about the synthesis process. Again, to repeat from the outline, we are seeing SSN and sensors in a larger IoT context, including interfacing with other ontologies, so things like provenance, so that people can actually track the provenance of the data they're getting from the sensors to where they're going. So we need to integrate SSN, as we said, modularly to other things. And then two directions for using semantics, more semantics in the sensor network. One is this sort of higher level type of semantics, which would look down from the top and see all the things that are going below it and understand something about that to be able to bring it together. That would require a top down or a big ontology versus more local semantics, which we call semantics on the edge, which would ignore these community and regional things, which would connect to more of the idea of smart agents knowing something about their immediate environment and their other participating sensors or devices. As well as the control entities that might be communicating with them, telling them what to do in a smart way. So this is a slide which talks about the evolution of SSN, starting with where it came from. So it came out of efforts to have standards on the idea of stimuli, sensors, and observations, and ontologize these, to bring these together. What SSN allows is a discovery of things like common sensors or common types of observations that are done and things of that nature. It knows something about the nature of the observations, the nature of the sensory devices, and things of that nature. And so you can query the resulting data. It's been very useful, and therefore it's being standardized by OGC and W3C. We expect that to occur within about a year. So going beyond that, however, while it's being standardized as an ontology, going beyond that, it's being integrated with other types of ontology. So I have a list of seven areas here, starting with the one by VOAS from NIST, talking about the 10 primitives that are being developed by NIST that incorporates a number of things like security and reliability in it. We need, obviously, a secure and reliable Internet of Things. The extension to computational observations, I mentioned before, the work of Chuck at NIST, at Notre Dame. I mentioned the extension and connection to Provo so that one knows essentially the provenance, the origination, and what happened to the data as others upstream are receiving the data. There is connections to application protocols such as COAP in terms of the data essentially being used later on. Elsewhere in IoT, connection with standard data cube types of vocabularies. One thing we didn't discuss maybe as in much detail, but you can see it in the medical domain, is connecting SSNO, which is general, with particular features of interest or particular domains. So that's one of the pieces of work that is actually done to really get something out of it, and it's quite varied. And one, the last example was in the biomedical realm, where we have the OBI, or Ontology for Biomedical Investigations, which deals with different types of sensing, as Barry Smith talked about, in terms of pain reports coming from people. People as sensors, obviously, the old-fashioned way. We also dealt with the topic of sensor failure, which is, in the human case, is misreporting of what's going on, pain, misunderstanding, and that type of thing, and the need to resolve some of those things. And then he also talked about the Ontology for General Medical Science, which is of interest, obviously. Further parts of the evolving SSN is evolving with service standards. And so one particular example of there, which was mentioned by Kostas, was something called IAAS, which actually there are other things called IAAS. And so what he means is interoperability service. So he provided a little bit of discussion out there on what we need for plug and play. Now, some of these are sort of just early starting work, so it's a direction to follow on some of these things. It's an attempt to form some of these standards over time. One of the big things, of course, about extending SSN is to handle more devices. So we have sensing devices, but we have other types of devices, or we have devices that hold multiple sensors on there. So having some distinctions about that and the relationship between the sensors can be important. We also have things that are sort of a little bit farther out in the IoT realm, which is all these collectors or aggregators, so extending out to those concepts, as well as control entities, things that are telling the individual sensors and the actuator devices what to do. So those are also examples of how the modular SSN is being connected to other things. And finally, down below, again, these are things that were mentioned largely by Kostas, Konstantinos Kostas, which a future vision, was providing a sort of a cognitive or psychological basis, a model of perception, because that's what the sensors are doing. They're perceiving things. So we're normally used to sort of human perception, and there's some cognitive activities that are involved in that. So if we want a sophisticated system that has inputs from humans and interactions with humans in a meaningful way, as well as smart systems, then we might have to have this type of cognitive framework for it. And so IntelliGo was mentioned as an example of that. And then also was he mentioned the idea of a smart gateway framework called SSGF for connecting things, making them work together. We weren't able to get Sarah Hastrom at the bottom of slide 7 to speak, but she and her group has done work of a similar nature on that, and one of her articles on this that you might refer to is Ontologies for the Internet of Things, which is also another view. We weren't able to have it fully represented here because she wasn't able to get into our sessions. So this should be slide 8, the next slide. You can't always see the slide number now. So this is talking about more semantics in the sensor network, and it comes back to one of our integrating ideas here. There's two fundamentally different ways of viewing this, and it was mentioned by Corey Henson in his early talk on the past, present, and future, as well as my co-champion Thorsten developed ideas along there of these two approaches. So one, you have the cloud on the top, and you have the local network on below. Semantics in the cloud, it's basically the idea you have the observations coming out of the sensors, and you send them somewhere for annotation and processing in a central location, and maybe getting a huge number of things. That's a in the distinction to a more distributed approach, which is approach 2, called semantics at the edge, where you have downscale semantic representation and reasoning for local processing. So you have more some intelligent devices down below that can do more of these things before it goes away into the larger, into the cloud. And there's obviously you can mix and match these to some extent. And see, here's our integrating table on that. I'll go down the left side. This is called more semantics in the sensor networks. I guess it would be like slide 9 in terms of the sequence. So if we look at the cloud type of thing, it's offline and happens after the fact. That is to say, the local devices have sent stuff, it's gotten up somewhere and so forth. We don't know when it gets there, and we don't know when it is actually processed later on. So it's somewhat centralized. It needs to integrate the various data it's getting from different collections or servers. You get the full data set so that you can have a lot of advantages of what you can do here. The analysis can be very broad now, time series, over time, over space types of reasoning. You can employ full computational power because you're going to somewhere which is centralized, and so you've got access to all that as opposed to a local device. And because of that, you would have complex ontologies up there. You could have the full range of things. You have large amounts of data, and you have large amounts of metadata, and you have potentially large integrated ontologies over there solving a variety of problems. So you have context because there's lots of range of data, too, so you may be able to do things with that context. On the other side is more of the smart agent type of thing, where it's on the edge, data streamed. It's more online as it's happening. Sort of a smart device or entity idea here can be completely decentralized or originally decentralized. Each device is both a sensor and a data processor to some extent, and maybe it participates with other sensor devices in some type of processing in an agreed upon way. They can collaborate. You would then theoretically have some type of window in terms of processing. You're not going to go on forever, but there's the idea that, okay, you're processing up to a purpose and then you're sending it on. But the result is somewhat integrated and understood. But because of all of this thing, you're going to have limited ontologies. You can't do everything. You can't be smart about everything. So you have to be more focused. So that's part of what might be talked about in terms of smart devices. So our next slide is called More Semantics for Entities and Activities in Sensor Network Semantics in the Cloud. So this is part of the big picture. And what I've used here is I've used a diagram that Konstantinos Kostas had below, which is talking about this layering of things. So you have the SSN in the middle, but we're talking about going beyond it, so that we would have, as you've sort of heard, some other IoT types of ontologies, like such as gateways on top that I mentioned here, as well as more abstract models of entities. So you can do a lot on top of the SSN beyond just the observations to make some type of conclusions. And below you have something like DOL, which is a grounding for both SSN and for the things that are on top. There are some links provided on here so that you can read more about what he has in mind on this. Part of what you have below here, implied here, is the need to use heterogeneous domain ontologies to semantically annotate data of IoT entities. And that's why something like DUL is here, that you have some type of conceptualization that can handle a range of features that you instantiate. And of course, we have entities and activities as part of the things going on in IoT. So more semantics in sensor network, or what I call adaptive semantics at the edge. This is, again, getting back to the topic from A, which is the idea of integration with ontologies. But the more important point here is you need the integration of ontologies because you have dynamic data forcing you to sort of look at things. You have devices coming into the network over time. You have new types of data types. And so you have to have a degree of automation or semi-automation to do some of these things. And so Kostas talks about smart entities and control entities and communication between them and dynamic reasoning that's needed. And again, I'm alluding to the Cavalcanti related topic here on RDF streams. Okay, so now I am down to my slide for my co-champion, Thorsten Hammond, and his partner, Sylvia Nattel's discussion. Very interesting discussion. So I have a graphic on what they're talking about as an example here, which is this environment, something like this, where we're having a meeting and various things are being recorded of it, being sensed in it. How do we get the big picture of what's going on here that people might be interested in? We need to understand complex processing events as part of the interactions here. So they note there are several layers to understand the signals you might be getting at a particular event like this. Of course, the other, we've heard about many other events like medical events and driving events and things of that nature, so you can imagine very different type of senses to make very different type of conclusions. But the commonality between that is that there's lots of there's social models being applied here about, you know, what you do in an environment, what the agents are, how they participate, and things of that nature. So they think that they can gather some data in this particular setting and really test out and develop over time some ontology that might apply some of these events. So this is a sort of a prototype for them. They want to ask, you know, what are the necessary conditions, what different types of meetings are, so they'll put the ontology out, and what are, of course, the distinguishing characteristics of these meetings. So those of you who know Thorsten know that something will happen here, as Mike well knows, that this is not sort of just any old idea. This is something which has behind it some understanding of the ontological issues and the utilities for it. So I would say stay tuned for something in this realm that we can expect in the next year or two. So to conclude, my last two slides here, and again, this was mentioned, I think, by Mike in his introduction that we know, and maybe Leo also in your presentation, talking about there are many challenges, and one of the challenges really is to get tools improvements for visualization of ontologies, but also how to insert ontologies and semantic technology into existing work. So we had some speakers who would talk about standards and didn't necessarily talk about ontologies and gave us a picture of the IoT realm. And as they do that, we can get some idea about where we could insert certain things like brokers were mentioned before might be able to help to some degree. And the idea here being also that it would be somewhat incremental, that I don't think we're necessarily going to solve problems with the small amounts of funding we typically get on projects to help. But I think we can demonstrate that we can help and that we can, along the way, develop some tools that will really help down the road. But we need to get funding for that type of thing. So for creation and visualization of ontology so that other people beyond technical people and the people in this room can use them, we need that. Integration with open data is also needed. And automation, or some type of close to full automation of ways of discovering, refreshing, aligning semantics over time, which would be part of the dynamic of IoT. It would be, to me, I think a lot of this in terms of evolution, it would be silly to think that we can just, okay, we spent 6 months or 16 months and developed this ontology. There it is. It's going to go out into the IoT realm and that will run forever. No, it's going to have to be dynamic. It's going to have the way of improving it based on experience. So essentially there will be some prototyping done early on, but there also has to be a need to adapt these things as we go on. And so that concludes the presentation. So I'm ready for questions. And maybe if Thorsten is on, he can actually answer questions. So he is. Okay, great. Maybe he wants to add something too.
Ed Thorsten, did you have any comments to follow up on Gary?
Hey there. No, I don't really have anything to add.
Yeah, so I have a question to start off. So on your slide 6, where you talk about the semantic sensor network ontology.
So we're getting back to you, Dylan.
There's a lot of noise in the background right now.
Oh, not here. We can hear you pretty well. I made a little hum.
Is there a lot of noise online just before I start? Okay. So one thing that's, you know, near and dear to my heart is with ontology evaluation are, say, competency questions.
Yeah.
And so to what extent could someone evaluate the current proposal for the semantic sensor network ontology in terms of, like, what's it really being designed to address? Like, what are the underlying capabilities that people feel they need within SSNO? And so that then we could evaluate it against those kind of underlying
logical requirements. Well, so if I understand the question,
it's being used to be able to query the data about data that's coming from the same type of sensor. So that would be, but it might be geographically distributed. So that would be one thing. Of course, these have locations, so you can ask about this the other way. Tell me, you know, show me all the data available for this region. Since it's semantic, you can do Sparkle queries, and because there are things, other standards which aren't listed here, but for GeoSparkle, you can do relational, spatial relationships querying, as you know, so things that are inside the region, things that are touching the region, and things that, so there are relations, spatial relations you can query with it also. So you can ask things like, if you are monitoring bird migration, you can ask essentially records of a certain type of agent, bird, that crossed this region within a particular time period, or did it at a certain rate because you have the times on it. So now this might require you to have a connection to a trajectory ontology, which has been developed, or semantic trajectory ontologies, which allow you to sort of not only know fixed points, but also something about what was measured at those fixed points, so that you could have velocities and things of that nature for it, or other sensors that might be on the migrating animals. So you can do that. So you can do it by sensor type. You can also do it by observation type, and then there are multiple sensors that might be taking observations locally and remotely of things like salinity or temperature and things of that nature. So that's a range of it. It is maybe important to know that some of the people that did this as part of W3C work group were very well versed in your approach for COMSTI questions, and indeed publications that I would often cite. They cite competencies. I can tell you that specifically for things like semantic trajectory that's been used on top of this. They cite the competencies you want to get out of the ontology connections. So, long answer.
Other questions?
Yes.
This is more of a comment. I hear a lot of things because I have my fingers in many pies, and I think that what you said about tools is absolutely at the heart of the matter. While you're talking about the sensor network and the fragmentation of the SSN sensor network, there is a project in DARPA where the U.S. Army, Navy, and the Air Force are taking their satellite network and completely dismantling them into multiple very small satellites. These very small satellites are taking various pieces of information, sending it to various other satellites to be processed, and then the information is sent to the Pentagon. The data is not sent because somebody is actually taking the piece of data from Afghanistan, saying, this looks like Afghanistan, this looks like these have these attributes, combined with other data that may have been found somewhere else, and then they're putting it together, sending it to the Pentagon, somebody is giving. So there are lots of similarities. I think I'm going to open up this for Ram and for us. I think we should have this meeting with some of the people from Vanderbilt University, some of the people from the companies, the many companies we have that has a lot of depth of working knowledge, and some of our working groups. We should have a joint meeting. Because you are talking amongst people who understand your language. That's great, but it's not good enough. This needs to go out into the public who do not understand what you're talking about, and they need to begin to understand what you're talking about. And that cross-fertilization is probably going to be very, very helpful, because what you said about tools is exactly what we need.
Thank you for the comment. I think that I really agree with that strongly. I think probably almost everybody here, if not everybody here, would agree with that. And it's really nice to have a meeting in which the next meeting, an important meeting with a larger group of people, is recognized. I think that's a real success output. I say one other thing is that I think your comment on, for example, this not sending the data but sending something processed, the information or the understanding, situational assessment it might be, is really an important thing for IoT as a whole. We need to sort of prototype and understand how to do that to be efficient.
So that experience might really be leveraged elsewhere.
It's been around. In sensor network processing has been around in the sensor networks for a long time. That's how mesh networks can actually send some of the data. That's the work of David Culler, TinyOS, TinyDB. And that was developed in the late 90s in Intel mode.
Is that done for security reasons or just to keep the data flow?
It's done to have high throughput in minimal resource. Because if you're sending lots of data and then getting somebody to do it remotely and sending it back, it may not be real time. So the lag, the time lag also. So it's a matter of latency also. Mm-hmm.
I think Mark had a question, and then Terry.
This is probably an unfair question, Gary, but I know you can handle it. We probably could ask this.
Well, the question's online, so I'm not worried.
Okay, great. You could probably ask this of any of the track folks, but to what extent do the models that are implicit in the sensors and also the analytics pieces that are processing data from the sensors informing our approach to this as opposed to what we might have seen in other ontology summits?
Well, they certainly should. We didn't get to that level, did we? We really didn't look at the underlying models that an individual sensor had. But this reminds me a little bit of the discussion we had before on events, I think, where there are underlying models. The ontologies, of course, make specific constraints on the model. The assumptions are specific. Something like SSN tries not to over-constrain what it's doing and wants to allow you to plug in a sensor type or a model. So again, you don't see them as part of that standard, but it's this place for them to say, okay, this is what you want to plug in. You have your constraints, specify them for you. So again, if we want to integrate something, the constraints may be different. And then we have to look at that problem, that challenge of having two different sensor models that don't necessarily interface very easily. And as part of the discussions, again, it was raised, the idea of bridge ontologies, the idea that, okay, if that happens, we now have a way of understanding this. How would people connect those? Let's formalize that understanding of how to bridge these two things. So that's there, but it wasn't part of our very explicit discussion.
Terry?
Thanks. I had two comments. First, the idea that you can take smaller things and generate very fast transfers of little amounts of data into something that essentially does a compositing of it so that you end up the original thing that you wanted. But what you're really doing is just increasing the number of channels simultaneously in use. And what I worry about is that in the process, you're throwing away your raw data. And I work in another organization that's interested in maintaining digital archives, and throwing away the raw data is a recipe for disaster. So I just wanted to caution people about going too far with this without being aware that when you throw away that initial stuff, you may well be throwing out the baby with the bathwater. The other thing was the idea that when you're talking about small devices, essentially, you have a surrogate or a model of that device is what they've been calling agents, I think. If that agent is a model of that device, then conceivably, almost any of those agents are really just software and just a computer program. And I believe that it's possible for any computer program to be restated as a non-procedural or a declarative program, which to me is essentially an ontology. So what I was trying to say is that you could probably take any of those models, or somebody might be able to experiment on taking any of those models and turning them into ontologies, and then maybe you'd have a way of integrating all your ontologies based on anything.
Well, I might respond again. So I have the floor, though I really prefer it to be a discussion of the group. In terms of throwing away data, so we know some places where you throw away huge amounts of data, like in CERN, we're smashing things, and only some events are of interest.
there are, these are not typically what we think of in terms of going on in IoT, but so you have a lot of data. You have to be empirical about this, I think. You essentially might want to run some gatherings in which you don't throw things away and see what you get out of it, see what the cost benefit is of it. So as we go forward, I mean, just evaluating these things, I think is going to be useful. And you might also just pick a strategy of saving some percentage of it just in case, right? But you can't save it all. Save a representative sample so that you might know something, be able to generalize.
And reprocess it statistically.
Yeah, potentially. So these are all possible. But again, it's this trade-off between, you know, what you can store, what you can process, and what's useful.
But once you get it up on the satellite, it's very hard to fix. If you're throwing away something you don't want to throw away.
Yeah. So.
Another comment.
One second.
So just a quick comment for Schumann first, actually. In one of the tracks after lunch, we'll talk a little bit about some work on in-network processing of ontological metadata, basically applying the semantic web to information-centric networking for mobile ad hoc networks. And then actually to Mark's comment, one of my current kind of gut beliefs is that a lot of IoT-style applications kind of naturally lend themselves to sort of ad hoc ontologizing because they're so simple and constrained, right? Like you have a sensor, it does a couple things. It seems very easy to model that and then, you know, start building applications off of that. You know, apps on a smartphone, writing, you know, models of those and trying to capture the data in some more meaningful way than just a syntactic format. It looks very straightforward because it's not like a giant CAD program or a big convoluted calendaring app or something like that. So my impression dealing with some application developers is that then they're not encouraged naturally to go basically looking for people doing this in principled ways. Right? So for example, I was doing some work recently on a DARPA project with some app developers where they were talking about provenance and they basically just started writing, you know, very simple notions of provenance in RDF, in AL, basically, and it never really occurred to them that there might actually be more to this modeling thing because when you're just doing a little app, you know, a little sensor, it looks very straightforward.
It seems like I have had this discussion 15 years ago. We are still having this discussion.
Yeah.
15 years ago, we discussed this, thought about this.
Yeah.
I actually even wrote a paper, which is still on the MIT website, 2001, 2002. Everything that I've heard today is still in the paper. What has happened in between?
It's the ideal progress, right? Maybe there is no.
No, I think the time has come where these things can now get integrated into solutions. Maybe, you know, with IoT, industrial internet, whatever it is, maybe this is the vehicle to actually bring this together.
Well,
so I think that this discussion really now needs to happen with people who do understand nothing of what you are talking about, and you understand nothing of what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to happen for the
Well, I think what has happened is that nobody has stood up to seriously fund the effort required to do that.
Okay, Ravi, I think you're on.
Can I be heard?
Yes.
Okay. Very, very, very interesting discussion. Hate to interrupt it, but I want to add to it. On the one extreme, which Dr. Datta gave example, there are now contemplated satellites, if already not working, where one satellite, say temperature measurement or some spectral measurement, is fed through a very intelligent onboard algorithm into another satellite proximity to correct for atmosphere, to give more water data, to give more moisture data. So there is an intelligent consortium of formation flying with automated learning and action automated. That's one extreme example of intelligence on board in totally autonomous systems. The other example is one authoritative data source should capture all data, raw data, so that in post-processing in future periods, if some corrections are to be applied, they can be done. rest all users of the system should use more or less intelligence information, not raw data. So this is the complex arena of where raw data, where pre-processed data, where action in real time. That's all I wanted to comment on.
Yeah, what, maybe one more question?
So really a response to what Schumann was saying a moment ago. You know, I think there are some very significant wide-scale usage applications out there of a lot of these ideas. So, you know, there are, I think there has been progress and things actually deployed and used. Right? So what I'm thinking of right now is, say, for example, the Google Now notifications on Android, right? I mean, that is a very sophisticated software agent for a human user that is driven by an explicitly encoded ontology of the Google's knowledge graph, right? It's just they don't talk about it like that to a great extent, right? It's really just a talk about the app and, you know, it's showing these notifications and stuff like that, and the mechanics are wholly divorced from that and then discussion of it. And, you know, I'm kind of tend to view a lot of what they're doing mechanically as also being very divorced from, you know, how a lot of the people here talk about ontology. It's just a very different mindset and approach to it, but ultimately that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a huge application right there.
So I would just add as a response also to this idea, we're still talking about things from 99 and so forth. We're going to be talking about interoperability for a long, long time beyond this. But you could look for, in terms of progress, you could look to prior summits, which sort of try to address various issues. The problems are there, but the way we address them are a little bit different in sophistication. So how we talk about ontologies and axiomatizing ontologies and what we can do is certainly different than what was in, existing in 99. And the way systems are smart is also different than the way. We wouldn't be talking about sort of having people, having cars drive themselves, right, if we hadn't made improvements between 99. So there are places, and they just need to be, I think they need to be showcased and featured to more people.
Okay. Thanks, folks. Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, a couple of quick logistics issues here. We have to reconvene here at 2:00 with the keynote speech by Keith Marzullo, who is the director of the networking division at SAIS in NSF. Second question, how many of you folks are going for the dinner today? Can you raise the hands? That's about it, I guess. So I need to go give a change of number there because the number, pardon? Okay, because the number I've given them is about 20. We have about 10, 15 or so. Okay, so I'll let them know. And the dinner right now we're scheduled is at 6:30. You want to change it or leave it like that, 6:00, 6:30? Or? Because we end the session at 4:30, so what are you going to do for? So let's see if we can put it at 6:00 and I'll call my secretary and see if we can change it to 6.
Five? Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, 6:00.
6:00 should, because the dinner is right in this complex, right on the ground floor. I don't know how many of you are going back to your hotels and coming back and things like that, probably.
Okay.
Depends.
Okay.
Pardon?
3 to 5:30.
Yeah, so 6 should be okay then. Okay. Yeah. That should be fine then. Okay. Anything else? Or,
okay in here.
I think they should be okay, yeah. Because I don't think anyone, we can just close the doors and I'll send email to Ford.
Okay, and then so for everybody online, we will be reconvening in approximately about 90 minutes at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.